Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Action fanatics, welcome to another edition of the Bulletproof Podcast. I am your host, Chris the Brain. Joining me once again, my co-host and colleague, Chad Cruz.
And best friend.
You said it, not me.
Yes, thanks for having me, Brain. It's always a pleasure to be back here talking with you about movies that we love.
Well, usually it's
or don't love.
Yeah, I would say usually it is movies that we love, but sometimes we've had a few stinkers along the way. And a lot of people are calling a certain movie that was released last week a stinker, and that's the latest edition of the Expendables 4, or Expendables with a 4 where the A is.
Expend-forables.
Yeah, a lot of hatred for this film.
And you know what?
Have you seen it?
I have not seen the film yet.
And, no, I'm talking about the hatred.
Yes, I have seen the hatred, and that's part of the reason I have not seen the film yet. But, I mean, at a certain point, right, we're spoiler alert, we're going to talk about 2010's The Expendables, the first in the series tonight.
Correct.
And I would like to ask the people who are spewing all this hatred towards the Expend-forables that, what did you expect? You know, these guys are old, they're elderly.
This
series has dragged on far too long. There's no doubt about that. And bringing in Megan Fox isn't exactly, you know, your the end all be all of action.
The adrenaline shot you need to keep going, right?
No, I'd like to give her a couple shots, but it wouldn't be of adrenaline.
Yeah. Yeah. I got you. The other thing I've noted, you notice about everything on social media is like nothing, everything either has to be the worst thing ever or the best thing ever. Where in fact, a lot of probably 99% of everything falls somewhere in between there.
Yes. Everything but two things is not the best, it's either the best or the worst. Everything else is there, right?
Right.
And I mean, having said that, this is probably going to be the best podcast episode of all time.
Wow. There you go, people. Tweet about that or X about it. I don't know.
X about
it.
Nobody says that, by the way.
No, they don't. Booker T might. But, you know, he's a special man.
Respect the man.
I do respect him. I love his commentary.
Respect.
Yeah, I did see it. I did cover it for the site. And yeah, I mentioned in my review, yeah, if you had a problem with Megan Fox, just the news of Megan Fox, you're gonna have a problem with the movie, because she is definitely all over the movie. It is definitely I wasn't a huge fan of 3, but it's been so long since I've seen part 3. You could probably say the 4th one is the worst of the bunch, but it was not completely without entertainment. I mean, you still have Jason Statham in there, you had some crazy ass action. And it's Expendables number 4.
Yeah.
Okay. It's very rare that the number 4 of any series suddenly becomes better. It's not unheard of. It does happen. Right. I would say Friday the 13th would have an argument with me, and I would agree with them.
Superman 4?
No. Superman 4 would not qualify. Now, Death Wish 4, I would not say is better. It didn't dip as badly, perhaps, as Expendables were, but it still was not as good as 1, 2, 3.
Now, I'm going to say this, and this might actually surprise you, but I've never seen the 3rd Expendables.
See, I saw it, and I don't remember much about it. There was a lot going on. They had the younger crew and the older crew. They had Frasier on it. It was something.
That was the turnoff for me was
Kelsey Grammer.
You're gonna bring in Kellan Lutz, and that's supposed to be like,
I thought you
something
loved
that
Kellan
gets
Lutz.
Me. No, I don't.
Oh, that's right. You love Cam Diginet.
I don't like him either.
All right.
Although Kellan Lutz did do that really good Australian sci-fi film that I enjoy.
Yeah, that's what I thought you did. You Kellan Lutz kind of grew on you in some of these movies.
But other than that, I couldn't name 15 seconds of, you know, footage that I didn't hate of his.
Do you think he's related to Lightning Tim Lutz?
Lightning Tim Lutz, legend in the ring.
Yes.
Also, my very first match for U-Brain at HWA.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was against
Lightning Tim Lutz.
It was against Lightning Tim Lutz.
Did you go over?
I put him over, by God.
That's right.
And he
gotta see if you were gonna come back, or to see if you were sticking around.
He legitimately caved in my face. Wow. He did a spinning heel kick on me. And we had, you know, this is a lot of wrestle talk here, but we had a spot early in the match, and I was going to powder out after that. He did a spinning heel kick, and he's apparently does them with his left leg, like Owen Hart or some shit.
Yeah.
And he fucking hit me in the face so hard, and I didn't know he did a left leg, and it kind of threw me for a loop. And I took it, you know, just like basically to the orbital bone, essentially. Yeah. And I legitimately had to powder out of the ring and catch my breath there, because he got me pretty good. But I had gone to a doctor about a month later, because I was just, you know, I always take forever to do everything. And I had a pretty good contusion on my skull. So
that explains a lot of things.
It does indeed.
Well, I'm sorry that happened to you. And I'm sorry I don't remember that match.
I still blame you, by the way.
You know, that wouldn't... If something is bad, of course, people will remember it was me in charge.
Yeah.
The good stuff, though, amazingly, these other people were involved that I'd never realized did anything. But that's, you know, another story for another time. So, yeah, as you mentioned, we are going to be talking about the original Expendables. But as we also just mentioned, the hate for this new Expendables is something else. If you want to say that this episode is the greatest of all on social media, or the worst, you can of course follow us, tag us, we're on social media, we're all over the place, we're at Bulletproof Pod on Twitter, aka X. We are at Bulletproof Action on Instagram, Facebook, and Threads. So again, because on social media everything is either the best or the worst, nothing falls in the middle, so you guys decide which end of the spectrum we're going to be on.
You're still doing that Threads thing, huh?
Yeah, I throw something up there once in a while.
Okay.
I mean, what's it going to hurt?
I don't know anyone who uses it.
More and more people seem to use it. I get really? Like new followers all the time.
Okay.
Onesies, twosies. I mean, not like a bazillion. Like all of a sudden I'm like, F you, Chad. We got 38,000 followers on Threads. So kiss my ass for not using. I hope it does too, because I love to be able to say F you, Chad Cruz.
You would.
Especially when it's legitimate and justified.
And you know what? I said that the other day. They had a preview for the TV show Loki.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know a single human being who watches it. Other than probably Ryan Campbell.
I was going to say Ryan Campbell covered the
yes, covered other than Ryan it. Campbell. I expect him to watch it because he gives us so much great content. So
he will watch it.
Other than him, I don't know anybody.
He will watch it for sure. I got to watch The Continental with Ryan Campbell.
Oh, that's cool.
While I was down in the Cincinnati area.
Thanks for the invite.
You were invited, and you weren't able to come. So, F you, Chad Cruz.
There's you have three kids, and see how valuable you are.
Exactly. Well, okay. We're going to move on, and we're going to talk The Expendables. It was, as you mentioned, released in 2010, August 13th, 2010, to be exact, and it not only starred Sylvester Stallone, Chad, it was directed by Sylvester Stallone.
How about that?
And
Renaissance man.
He really is. It starts off with the...
He was alive in the Renaissance, by the way.
Yeah, it starts off with the roar of motorcycles, and we get the first look at the Expendables logo. And then we cut to the full moon over the Gulf of Aden near Somalia. And we see a ship, and there's pirates, and there's flashlights, and it's all kinds of chaotic situation going on. They're seeming to be bringing these prisoners to the upper deck of the ship. And then we pull back out. We see a small boat with what appears to be maybe five or six guys in there. And you got to believe, is that the Expendables? We're about to find out, because these pirates... Somalia is known for their pirates, aren't they, Chad Cruz?
I think so. I think that's one of the things they're known for.
Is that like 50% of their population are pirates?
I don't think it's that high, but I mean...
Or they're a vocal minority.
Yeah, if there's like three pirate attacks a year, then that's the three times you hear about Somalis.
That's unfortunate. So, yeah.
I work around a lot of Somalians, and they're very lovely people.
Well, if any Somalians are listening, tweet us or X us or whatever. Let us know what's going on over there, because unfortunately Hollywood has only painted the picture that you have pirates.
Yeah.
And that I'm sure that is not an accurate depiction of your fine land.
Right. And if you're a Somalian pirate,
don't talk to us.
Yes. Don't X us. Cause when you say like X me,
X marks the spot in like, pirate talk.
Oh, they'd show up to your house.
Mm-hmm. Yours, yeah. Jack Cruz house. So yeah, these pirates.
I have lots of guns, by the way. So I don't.
I bet you do, and not just right. The two on your arm. We got these pirates. They're shooting this video. They're asking for ransom money for these prisoners. But then they got lasers on them, Chad.
Hell yeah!
Freaking lasers, and it's not sharks with them on them. It's the freaking Expendables, and they dropped this bag. They say there's $3 million in there. I wonder if there really was.
I bet it's Dolph Lundgren's old VHS collection.
Oh, that would be worth $3 million to some. But now they're like, oh, no, that was last time we asked for money. It's up to $5 million now. And it's like, oh, of course, a greedy pirate. Next thing you know, Dolph Lundgren, who played Gunner, shoots the frickin' pirate leader in half.
Yeah, he sure does. I don't know what weapon that was, but it was pretty awesome.
It was powerful.
I saw
a punch.
I saw this movie in theaters way back when. This is when I actually used to go to the movie theaters.
2010, because you didn't have three kids yet.
That's right. I didn't have any kids at this point. But I think I was single, which, man, what a good time that was. But saw this in theaters. And this is the moment where I knew this movie was going to be badass.
Yeah, I mean, it's an attention grabber for sure. And then we kind of get to see the start of the relationship between our two main guys, which is Barney Ross, played by Sylvester Stallone, and Lee Christmas, played by Jason Statham. And there's definitely a bit of a friendly rivalry between the two.
Sure. They got the Legolas Gimli thing from Lord of the Rings going.
And we see that Gunner is something of a loose cannon, because once, you know, they take out, basically Barney and Lee are challenge each other who's going to take out the rest of these pirates. I think it's a tie, as it often is with these two.
Right.
But now Gunner wants to just hang a pirate just to, I guess, send a message.
I think that's a historical
significance,
you know, to that hanging pirates.
Fill us in.
That's no, I think they would catch pirates and they would hang them.
Okay. Thank you. I thought you had a deeper story for us.
No, I don't.
The history buff of the staff that you are.
Yes.
All right. Well. Nothing. You don't know anything. It's fine. But, you know, the rest of the team's like, hey, man, that's taking it too far. We did what we're supposed to do. And you got the rest of the team. It's Toll Road, Randy Couture, Hail Caesar, the awesome action star, Terry Crews. What action movies was Terry Crews in prior to this, Chad Cruz?
Oh, there's so many. I have no idea. I can't think of a single one.
Zero. And Yin Yang, played by the one and only Jet Li.
Yeah.
I will remind everyone, we did cover a Jet Li movie at the start of 2023.
Yes.
And it was the wrong Jet Li movie.
I'm still...
Chad picked the wrong one.
I'm still, you know, for all our listeners out there, I've still got this one Jet Li film that I'm planning on watching
soon. Oh, yeah, so that too. I forgot.
Be looking out for that review soon. I'll say right away, I hate their names.
Yeah.
So this movie, it's obviously like just a fun exploding things movie. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But when their names are so stupid, you instantly I'm told not to care about any of them. I refuse to care about a man named Toll Road.
He's not as cool as Toll Booth. From G.I. Joe with the bridge
layer. Toll Booth Willie.
With the bridge layer. Do you have that as a youngster?
I don't remember if I had him.
I had that. It was hours of fun putting that bridge.
I don't think I had that one.
Could only go over so long, though, of a gap.
Yeah. I was pretty poor. I didn't have that many good ones.
Okay. Well, so yeah, the guys are, they're not happy that Gunner's like going to try to hang this dead pirate. So Yin Yang goes up there to do something about it, and they kind of get at it a bit. Very obvious these two don't like each other, and that's going to come into play a little bit later on. But job well done. They got the, I guess the hostages are safe or prisoners, or they took them to safety, and they fly back. Get a little Georgia satellites, keep your hands to yourself. A lot of great classic rock tunes in this film.
There are. I noticed that at some point in the film. It wasn't with one of the classics that it really brought it to face for me. It was when they were playing like Saliva, and I was like, oh, hell yeah. This is definitely early 2000s.
There you go. And Christmas goes back to check on Gunner, who obviously had a moment or two there on the mission. And he seems to say he's fine, but we'll find out that Gunner is not long for this team. Once they get back to stateside, Christmas goes to see his lady, Lacey, who has not heard from him in over a month, which I imagine being a mercenary, you're not keeping regular hours.
No.
Or routine, or, you know, right. you could be gone for a couple days, you could be gone for a couple weeks.
Yeah, I think it's the, I think that you have to have a fluid schedule. You have to be ready to fly out of somewhere at the drop of a hat. And yeah, I believe she was played by, was it Charisma Carpenter or somebody?
I believe you're right.
Is that right?
I better click on her. Click on her.
Yep, Lacey, Charisma Carpenter. Lovely, lovely gal.
She really was.
Yep.
And she goes, he said, you know, okay, I haven't been around, but hey, I got a nice ruby for you.
Yeah. This was obvious. Like, you know, every time he comes in town, he rolls in there and gives her a unique piece of jewelry or a gift of some kind. And they rub on each other for a while and then he's gone again.
Yeah. But, you know, that's a nice surprise that he had for her, but she has a surprise for him. There's another man at the house, and he's not happy that this friend, air quotes, of hers has showed up so late in the night. Like, what is this about? I mean, this is like booty call time.
Yeah.
So he's not happy. And obviously,
I don't blame him.
Lee Christmas is not happy either because, hey, wait a minute, you're my booty call. Who's what? What's going on? So we got that going on. I don't know why this is included in this film, but.
Yeah.
Other than to pad the time.
Right. I always said this movie needed 15 minutes cut.
Yeah.
And it probably could have been this side story.
And, you know, I should go into this. I remember watching. I did not go to the theater to see this. I watched it. It came out on Blu-ray and I like got it. Like, oh, cool. I missed it in the theater, but I'm going to watch it as soon as the Blu-ray came out. And I remember watching it and just feeling like, eh. And I think it was things like this Lacey storyline. I mean, as wonderful as she was to have on the screen, why? It like kind of ruined it killed the flow. We started off hot. Yeah. And I know you got to take it down. It's a roller coaster, but I don't know.
This movie could have easily been Predator. You didn't
need romance.
Didn't need any type of love interest. And, you know, you had the female we'll meet later, whose name I can't remember.
Sandra.
Sandra. She's fine. You didn't need any more.
Right. Yeah. Her. Especially since you had that kind of more part of the story.
Right.
Semi romance going on. And you didn't need to like shoehorn this side story in.
And you could have actually had, you know, you didn't need those scenes to have this be a part of Christmas's character. You know, like every time he kind of shows up and he's all like, you know, kind of down. Did you lose another one? Yeah, they hate when you never show up for 6 months. You know what I mean? Mm. Like he could just be a down on his luck in the love realm kind of guy. I don't know.
Lucky in cards, unlucky in love, perhaps. Barney goes to his good friend Tool's tattoo shop. Tool, played by Mickey Rourke. I don't know if it's the lighting of this film, but he looks less like a lizard than he does in a lot of other movies.
Yeah, he's less lizard-like, but... Jesus, this guy is a disaster.
Yeah. Well, Barney goes to get a tattoo finished up that apparently has been an ongoing process. They reminisce about their time in Nigeria, so we figure out that Tool was once an expendable himself before he decided to hang it up and start a tattoo parlor in a garage. And you know, and he also, we, this is where he kind of get the, he just kind of slips it in there that, hey, we had to get rid of Gunner.
Right. And I like scenes like this. Mm-hmm. I like to build these characters, kind of builds a little camaraderie between the group, at least the members that are there. And, you know, just like, you know, some of the scenes that we'll get later on is we're kind of, we're still meeting people for like half the film.
Right.
Like they're just kind of like, hey, there's Terry Crews again, but we don't know shit about him. Mm-hmm. So these are actually kind of cool, and it gets them, gives them a chance to kind of play off each other a little bit. So I didn't mind this scene so much.
And the way that Tool reacted to Gunner being dismissed from the group, you could tell that, you know, this was a ongoing, this wasn't like a one-time thing. Like he wasn't right. really shocked that like, hey, yeah, that's kind of, he was heading that direction when I was with the team. So I get it. So then Christmas shows up, Tool has a grand vision to put a big spider web on, Christmas's bald head. That doesn't happen. They have a little knife throwing contest, but then a call comes in, some possible work for the Expendables.
Yeah. And it's another cool scene. Like, you know, Tool plays multiple roles here. He's not just a guy that they show up to and drink with and whatnot, but he also is kind of like their handler guy.
Yeah, they call him when they need to get to the Expendables. We cut to the island of Elena, and we see three accused thieves answering to the man they stole from, General Garza, played by David Zayas, who I will always remember from Dexter.
Dexter, yes, agreed.
You know, General's kind of reading them the riot act, so to speak, and just, you know, blah blah blah. And then all of a sudden we get another villain who steps in, Mr. James Monroe, played by Eric Roberts of Best of the Best fame. He steps in and just shoots one of the thieves in the back of the head. He tells Garza, they didn't just steal from you, they stole from us. So these guys are in cahoots. And it seems like Monroe thinks he's the man or in charge, because he's like, you need to shoot these other two. And you show your men what happens when, you know, they get out of line.
So do you think that his name, the significance of it being Monroe, James Monroe, you know, the Monroe Doctrine with the United States basically, you know, protecting, if you will, that's quote unquote protecting all these countries on this side of the hemisphere. Do you think that was like a...
I did not think about that. But again, I'm not the history buff of the of the group.
I could be totally wrong, but
I like it. It's a good theory, and it makes you sound very educated.
Oh, thanks.
And I sound like a moron.
I wish I could fart on command right now. I'd let a big fart, but sorry. Yeah,
you got to balance everything out.
Yeah.
So now we go back to the U.S. where Barney is meeting with Mr. Church, played by Bruce Willis, and I don't believe that's his real name. He actually says, since we're meeting in a church, just call me Mr. Church. Fair enough.
Yeah, why not?
Meeting about this job that they got the call on. But wait, there's one more possible candidate for this job. Oh, and it's Barney's oldest, worst friend, Trench, played in an uncredited role by Mr. Arnold Schwarzenegger. And they have some back and forth, ball busting. And eventually, though, Trench is like, you know what? You just let Barney have it. He likes to run around in the jungle. And then he leaves. And that's the end of Arnold Schwarzenegger in this film.
Yeah.
And I think that was another thing that kind of was like, because the way they built it up, and maybe I built it up in my own head.
Yeah.
Like, oh, you're going to have Stallone. You're going to have Arnold. You're going to have Dolph. You're going to have Bruce. I mean, And then some of these people are on screen for mere minutes.
Right. Yeah, I could see, you know, if you came into this thinking that all these actors were going to be spending a lot of time on screen, yeah, you could probably be pretty pissed off about it. But I was happy with his
lack
of involvement.
Yeah.
And I'm actually, you know, I appreciate the scenes in the movie where Terry Crews and Randy Couture and those guys get to do cool shit, because you know, for so much of the film, they're just like in the background, or they're really not even people. Right. They're just guys in hats. So it's good that they can kind of show themselves as actual team members and not just like dudes in red shirts, you know?
Yeah. So Yeah, so obviously Barney's going to get the job if he wants it. There are resources on that island that Church's people are interested in. Barney gives him a quote of $5 million with half up front, half to an offshore account. Church doesn't seem to have a problem with that, but tells Barney, don't you screw him over or him and his people will chop Barney and his guys up into dog treats. So okay. This Church is, he ain't playing.
You don't fuck around.
Barney goes back, and Gunner there is waiting, and he kind of sees that Valena file. And he's, oh, going to Valena? I want to come with you. And Barney's saying, no, I can't trust you while you're using. So.
And, you know, so easily it could have been Valverde and we could have all been happy about it. But
that is definitely one of the things I, when people were bitching about four, they went back to their original bitching too about.
Yeah.
And yeah. Why wasn't it Valverde? Very interesting.
And you know what? If it had been Valverde, 9 out of 10 people would have no idea what that is or care.
But that 10th person would be jizzing their pants.
The people that talk shit on Twitter are the ones who see those things and they realize what they mean. And
yeah.
And they're the ones that are going to go tell their friends to watch it. So, yeah.
You're right.
I mean, every time I jizz my pants, I tell somebody about it.
I'm sure you do. So, yeah. No, sorry, Gunner, you're not allowed back. So now they have the meeting at the garage. We get to hear Toll Road talk about his cauliflower ear for the first time. But that may have been our first time, but it's obvious that he's told this story many times based on the reaction of his friends.
Yeah, it goes a little long. He gets into it way too deeply that I don't give a shit about.
And he's still talking about it in part four. I will just...
Oh, God, who gives a shit?
But there's always new people to tell.
Yeah, but you know, like it's like if you live in today's world and you don't have any idea what cauliflower ear is, so you tell me you don't know anyone who's ever wrestled, you never seen MMA on TV, you know?
Right, it's a big time thing.
It's pretty well known, yeah. But whatever.
Well, Yin Yang wants more money. He's got to put his son in a better school, and everybody's like, "You have a family," and he doesn't kind of elaborate at all. All right, but before the whole team goes, Barney and Christmas are going to go check things out, do a little recon. So we need some Mississippi Queen to be playing when you're doing that. And they go there in their cool, expendable plane, seaplane. And, you know, as they're walking around, they see these citizens like going, they get scared shitless when like the army guys come into town. And they get a good look at the guy in the suit, Mr. James Monroe, and his muscle, Payne, played by the one and only Stone Cold Steve Austin.
What?
Stone Cold Steve Austin.
What? Sorry.
And the fact that Austin was in this movie is a shock that I didn't go see this in the theater. Because I'm a huge Stone Cold fan, as many people are and were, and will always be.
Yes.
He's pretty freaking awesome. They go into a cantina, and I was like, okay, they're going to get in a fight because when
that's what you do.
Guys go into a cantina and or bar or saloon, they're going to get in a fight. But they don't. Instead, they meet their contact, Sandra, who we talked about. She wonders who these two gentlemen are. Lee introduces them as Buddha and Pest.
Yeah, you know, whatever. That's more comedy. I don't know. A lot of these sequences to me are just like, all right, this movie, I get what it is. It's let's blow shit up and tell funny one-liners.
Yeah.
Look at our names. Look how silly our names are. Oh, I have kids. When did you get kids? Like, it's just like, so every scene that we're not blowing shit up or preparing to blow shit up or learning funny stories or anecdotes about our guys, I'm like, okay, I'm just doing the old, like, let's wrap this shit up. Cause this whole Sandra gimmick, right? They took the job. What exactly was the job?
To kill General Garza.
To kill him. Okay.
Yeah.
It seems like killing this guy would have been not that difficult. They have a fucking plane.
Right.
They could just drop a fucking bomb off that thing.
Right.
Yep. But they make it much more difficult by going in. They meet the contact. I mean, really, all the contacts could do is be like, he lives right there.
Yeah.
And like, oh, yeah. Cool.
She drives him around, says, you know, things were great here until these Americans came with some money and then everything started to change.
Blame the U.S. I get it.
Yeah, exactly. Garza, where is he? He's in the palace. Oh, well, look, get us as close to the palace as you can. All right. Meanwhile, we go and we check in with Monroe, who's pissed at the crops that they're growing are behind schedule. So there is nothing. They have no crops because nothing's growing yet. And Garza's pissed at Monroe for speaking to him like that in front of his men. So there's very tenuous relationship between these two. It's not as entertaining, though, as Cobra Commander and Destro.
Right. And it could have been.
It could have been, yeah.
I mean, this they could have been, you know, some
evil Garza was a bit too much stoic, too stoic for that.
Yeah.
He'd have to be as, you know, because you got Cobra Commander, who's pretty freaking over the top. And then you got Destro.
Right.
Just is a shit disturber.
And
my absolute favorite character in animated history, possibly.
David Zayas,
yeah,
and Dexter, awesome. David, yep. Zayas as the main villain in Expendables, not awesome.
Yeah, well,
he's not intimidating.
I would argue that Eric Roberts is the main villain.
You'd probably be right.
This guy's just one of, like a puppet, just a means to his end. He's right. Manipulating him.
Yeah, Roberts is more like Vernon Wells from Commando, and Zayas is. What's his name?
Carlos Cervantes.
No. What was the leader of Valverde? What was his name?
Oh, shit. Yeah, I don't remember. Dan Hedaya's character.
Dan Hedaya.
I don't remember his character name, but yeah, I knew.
But yeah, the general. So he's
Bertelli, if you will.
It's so similar to that film in so many ways, but it lacks some of the crucial elements that make Commando one of the greatest action movies of all time, and this just kind of like, eh.
So the troops, you know, they get, obviously they're paying attention to shit, and they see these people near the entrance, and so they're coming down there, and they see that, like, I don't care whose daughter, you could be the general's daughter, but you're not immune to the laws of this land. And that's like, oh, so Sandra is Garza's daughter. So that was a reveal there. And then it's time to just start taking out these troops.
Yep.
And Christmas, who I should mention, he had kind of left the truck and decided to get a different view. So, but he shows up in the nick of time and they take out all these troops. Monroe hears about this trouble. So now they're going to head over to where the trouble is. We get a little chase scene, which is always welcome in an action film.
Sure.
And when they get to their, you know, they're like, Sandra, you got to come with us. No, I'm not going. I can't go. So she refuses. Christmas goes to the plane. Barney goes and takes out almost the customs guys.
Yeah.
And he takes them out. Then he has to run to catch this plane, jumping, hanging onto the door frame as it's just increasing speed in the water. Monroe and the truckload of troops arrive on the dock, but Barney gets inside. Surprise, surprise. Then once they're in the plane, they circle back. And like you said, here they go. They've got this freaking plane.
Hell yeah.
That is weaponized. They just start shooting the shit out of things. And then do a little fuel dump and shoot a flare and light the whole freaking dock up.
Yeah, this is probably my favorite scene in the whole film.
Yeah, this was fun. Okay. Up until that point, I was like, you know, I kind of remember why this one didn't resonate with me so much. And then this chase, and then this happened, and I'm like, fuck.
It's good. Pretty awesome.
Yeah.
And it doesn't, you know, right, it's a movie. The fuel, like, as they're flying away, and the shit's blowing up, and there's flames everywhere, the fuel that's coming off their plane is not on fire for whatever reason, but anyway.
They stop it somehow? I don't know.
It's still going as they're flying away.
That is true.
But yeah, it's a badass scene. And you know,
I mean,
you
get it worked in Die Hard too. It didn't work the same way there.
No, a little bit different playbook here. But yeah, it's funny because together, Stallone and Statham are so awesome in this sequence. And they're like pretty much untouchable. And then they go get the rest of their buddies and come back. And it's like, oh shit, I guess we're not as good as we once were.
And yeah, and that's another thing to point out. Again, going into this movie, in my head, they're like, oh, this is going to be like a G.I. Joe movie where it's got this whole crew of guys. Where really, yeah, for the most of it, it is just Stallone and Statham.
Yes.
Well, I've seen team-up movies 9 million times. I've never seen a big, like, all these action guys at one time.
Right.
So again, that was another part. And again, this is what happens when you build things up in your brain. Monroe now wants to know how the hell this could happen. They fortunately were able to jump out off the dock before they burned up. You got these two guys who show up, take out 41 of our soldiers. Two guys take out 41 soldiers. Oh, I know how this could happen. They had help. And who could help them? That damn daughter.
Sandra.
So he wants... So she has to go. So now that's going to be priority. General Garza, of course, does not agree with it. Even though, obviously, he and his daughter don't see eye to eye, he doesn't want his daughter to die.
Right. Yeah, that's
which makes sense.
You have arguments in life, but you don't always want your kid to die.
No, absolutely not. So then Gunner shows up. He is there, and he's there to sell out his former friends. But Monroe's guy, Payne, doesn't like him. And the Brit, Mr. Gary Daniels.
Yes.
Are not fans. And it's nice to have Gary Daniels in because, again, this is a Millennium film, which from New Image, and Gary Daniels had done Cold Harvest with New Image. So I wish more of the they would have snuck some more of those New Image guys in, even if it was just little roles here and there.
And I like his character a lot.
Yeah.
He plays a great, secondary henchman.
Yeah, he's a good bad guy.
And you know, and we'll talk about it later, but he gets more time to shine later.
He sure does. When we get back, now Barney's had a theory that Church is probably CIA and that the real target in all this is Monroe, who is probably former CIA.
Right.
And you're not wrong, Barney. Christmas now goes back to Lacey's house. And she's kind of coy when she opens that door and he has her hair down. But he notices something's not right. He looks, she's been hit. She's got bruises on her face. Finds the guy who did it. He's at a basketball court with his boys. And they all get their asses kicked. I will say this for his friends. They stepped up.
Yeah, big time.
They had no idea who this guy was. But they're like, he's going after our boy, so we're going after him.
I think that if you're a grown man,
yeah,
and you're playing pickup basketball,
yeah,
at night, you guys got to be pretty close.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like if you're in a rec league, whatever, if you're in a softball league with some guys from your church, whatever, probably not going to fight for them. But if you're playing pickup basketball in a park with your 40-year-old friends
and
at night, you guys are probably pretty damn close. You probably got a cooler full of beers next to the court. You're probably having a good time. So, yeah, it's not a big surprise that they're fighting for him. I think my buddies would fight for me. Actually, you know, the scariest part was I got a couple friends I think they would just pull a gun on him.
Wow.
Yeah, that's how we roll. So.
You go hard. Then Statham takes the basketball, puts it on the guy's, stomach, stabs it, and says, next time I'll deflate all your balls.
Yeah.
And tells Lacey, now you know what I do for a living. Which I, does she?
Stab basketballs.
Yeah. I don't think that really cleared things up. But
no, it didn't.
Obviously, she knows he is some sort of badass. But she may have already figured that out. Meanwhile, back on Valena, troops are looking for Sandra. That's the whole. They're there. And we cut back again. And now Barney is back with the wise tool at the tattoo shop. And he tells about Sandra and how she had the chance to leave but didn't do it. And you just can't get her out of his mind.
Yeah.
She really made an impression on him.
In more than one way, I think.
Oh.
Yeah.
You think he jizzed in his pants?
I think he's going to have to pack a couple blue pills next time he goes down there.
And that's right, Blue Chew. If you'd like to sponsor the Bulletproof Podcast and our dozens and dozens of listeners, we will gladly shill your dick pills for you.
I will take those pills.
Yeah.
At the beginning of the podcast.
And they'll have a fourth kid before we
And know. I'll have a raging veiny boner the entire podcast.
Yes. Just that's what everybody wants to know about. Ah, where were we, Boner Man? Oh yeah, Sandra's been caught. Here was a interesting choice that was about to come up that I question why someone allowed it to happen. But Monroe states he would never strike a woman. He'll push him if need be, but he'll never actually hit him. However, Payne doesn't mind.
Stone Cold will hit a woman.
And unfortunately, yeah, given some real life situations, I was like surprised.
Yes.
That they went there, but it's all right. It's an unfortunate chapter in Stone Cold's history. But it, I mean, it works for a legit movie bad guy, because it's make believe and pretend people.
Yes.
Garza then says he asks his daughter, why didn't she leave? And, well, he'll figure it out. But then we get Monroe, Payne, and the Brit waterboarding old Sandra, asking, why were the Americans there? Who are they after? What did they tell you? Blah, 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 blah. But she's not talking.
Good for
her. She's a tough broad.
She is. You know what, Sandra? You're okay in my book.
So now Barney wants to go back. I don't even know, is this part of like the job or is this just now personal? Is he just going back without the money? I would assume he still get the money. But he's got to go.
Didn't kill the general. So
they haven't killed the general. So yeah, that's true. If he just went back and got her, he would not get the $5 million.
Right.
And he might get chopped up into dog treats.
Yeah, exactly. So let's not make it out to be some like chivalrous save the damsel in distress thing that I don't think that it really is. Maybe he's trying to get two birds with one stone here.
Yeah.
Two birds, kill the general, get the money. That's one bird, other bird, get his dick wet.
Yeah, because, you know, she's got daddy issues. So sometimes
and he's older than her.
Those
dad.
Are susceptible women.
Yes.
They're easy prey if you
grandpa issues.
If you know what to say. Yeah, okay. So Barney, he's going to go alone. I don't expect you guys to come with me for this because this is something I have to do.
Right.
But Yin Yang is like, "No, I'm going, bud." And he hops in the passenger seat of Barney's. I need the money. And soon as they like kind of pull out and start making their way to I guess the plane. Gunner is tailing
gun
them.
Store.
yeah, were they going to get some re-up the ammo, go stop and get some beef jerky? I don't know what they were going to go do. So Yang, once again, is talking about needing the money. You know, as a smaller guy, he has to work harder. He's really trying to sell this whole money thing. And he does admit that he does not have a family, but he might someday. So it'd be good to have some of that money stored away. And then these two mercenaries that have been in all these places, gone on all these missions, nearly die just like sitting in traffic.
Hey, dude, I don't know what city they're in, but some of these cities are dangerous.
I think it was like probably New Orleans. I believe they're like
New Orleans was the murder capital of the United States for many, many years.
Well, you're right. So that leads to some vehicular mayhem, which is always a wonderful thing to see. Barney, at some point during the chaos, realized Gunner is involved. When the chase stops, we get Gunner versus Yang. And again, that was kind of established early on. These two do not like one another.
This was actually
a recent scene of the week that I did on bulletproofaction.com if you want to check that out. Barney then eventually steps in and shoots Gunner because he's about to just Ultimate Warrior. Press slam, let him drop into and impale him. But Barney steps in, shoots him. Did not shoot to kill, because he easily could have.
Yes, he aimed 2 inches above his heart.
He's a very good marksman.
I like when Gunner says, I was just going to scare him.
Right.
No, you weren't. You're going to kill him. Exactly. Okay, yeah, I was.
Who sent you? Who hired you? And he's a come closer and he whispers in his ear and we don't know what the hell he said. But he obviously said enough because now Barney knows everything he needs to know. But this, he needs everyone. Everyone's coming now. We're going. We're going to go do what we got to do. Meanwhile, back on Velena, General Garza there, he's trying to get control again because this Monroe's run roughshod. So he's got his guys all in face paint to show their loyalty to him.
It's badass looking.
Monroe thinks they look like fools, though. But what the hell does Monroe know? Garza then tells Monroe, I want my daughter brought to him now or he will kill him. And that's about the time the Expendables have made it to Velena, which must not be very far away.
Yeah, I don't, I mean, you're talking,
or we don't a flight really know from, we don't really know the timeline either.
A flight from New Orleans, maybe, you know, to somewhere in Central America or South America.
Yeah. New Orleans would make sense too, if they have a seaplane.
Yeah.
They need to be near water.
It could work. They're not on Lake Michigan, I don't think.
Right. No, no, so. they're right there. So yeah, the Expendables arrive. They're taking out the guards left and right. We cut to Sandra, who's being guarded by two guys. Horny guys? Yeah.
Aren't these the two guys who are trying to rape her?
Oh, yeah. They're horny, and they're messing with her.
Yeah.
And one's about to burn her with a cigarette.
Ugh, jerk.
And Barney walks in and chops the man's hand off and then stabs him. He dead. Rescues Sandra. Tries to get her to safety, but he gets a big clothesline.
Hell yeah.
Out of nowhere.
From out of nowhere.
Sandra's quickly recaptured. And now poor Barney's the one getting interrogated by Payne and the Brit. And this is where business really starts picking up. Because it's the Expendables to the rescue.
And this is where you start thinking about how much budget do we have left.
Right.
Because we
must have saved a lot of it for right now.
Yes, I think they had to have. They might have filmed this part first. That's what I would have done.
Yeah.
And then they're like, okay, well, if we have enough money, we'll blow this bridge up with the airplane. Mm-hmm. Everyone's like, fuck yeah. And then they save just enough money to do that. But yeah, we finally get the Expendables to the rescue. And, you know, we're not talking just Jason Statham. We finally get our buddy Randy Couture, Toll Road?
Toll Road, yeah.
And we get Terry Crews, Hail Caesar, and his loud-ass gun.
Oh, that
just gun. Like wiping dudes out,
just mows them over,
just ruining shit with that gun. And yeah, of course, Yin Yang, he's running around kicking people. And
well, yeah, we get Barney. We get Stallone versus Stone Cold. That means like Stallone needs to take on The Rock and John Cena, and I think he'll have the Mount Rushmore.
The Mount Rushmore of
babyface WWE champions. Because he took on Hulk Hogan, as we may recall.
He did.
Way back when. But yeah, you get Barney versus Payne. You get Yang versus the Brit.
Yep.
With an eventual Christmas run-in.
Which is very cool.
Yeah.
Because you get, you know, he gets an opportunity to not only fight Jet Li, but he's getting double-teamed by Jet Li and Jason Statham, which is a lot of fantasies for women, I think.
Oh.
But so he gets to kind of like, he gets to go out like he's pretty hard, you know?
Yeah.
He's not a pushover.
They take him out, but yeah, it takes two of them to do it.
And that final kick to him that takes him out is amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Great piece of business from Gary Daniels. Again, one of those guys who play good guy or bad guy. And maybe sometimes I think that almost hurts. Like, if you can't be one definitive, like, I think that's all maybe why Dolph never really rose to the level of an Arnold and a Stallone.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Because he could play both sides of it. And I mean, he did great. I mean, I think some of his best work was as a villain in Unisol.
Mm-hmm. I would agree. I think that I think some guys are just better at being bad.
Yeah.
But you know, I think Dolph in Men of War is so good. He's very charismatic and he's still a good guy, but he's also a badass. So I think that you can play that anti-hero role. Like, you know, we're talking about Stone Cold in this movie, right? So,
yeah. And that's why he's so good in the Punisher.
Yes.
Cause he's a little bit of both.
And he's a traumatic mess in the Punisher too, which
and he's naked in a sewer.
Yes, Naked in Sewer. I mean, I haven't done that since college. So,
right.
I mean, those were dark times. But I think that this movie has a lot going for it. And some of the things that it has going for it are these, you know, these side henchmen like Steve Austin and Gary Daniels.
Yeah, I mean, they made sure. And when you have, you know, the babyface side loaded like they do.
Yes.
You got to make sure the heel side is pretty loaded, too. And they did a good job with that.
Right. And you have Antonio Nogueira, who's a big MMA champion, UFC champion back in the day, big Brazilian jiu-jitsu guy. So he was, at the time, he was probably at the tail end of his career, probably 2010. Shit, he's probably still fighting on these guys. But he was still a big thing in the MMA world, so... I'm surprised we didn't get him and Randy Couture going at it for a while.
Right. But
maybe they did fight. I don't remember, but they didn't get like an extended fight sequence.
Right. So now at this point, Garza wants Monroe to just take the money and just go, just get out of there. But Monroe's like, there's way more money to be made here. I'm not going anywhere. Garza turns to Sandra, admits, you know, you are who I should have been this whole time. You know, she's about the people.
Woman.
No, I think he meant, you know, she's for the people and
for the
country, and where he was kind of like thinking, hey, me, I could be rich, I could be powerful,
right.
Blah, blah, blah. Meanwhile, downstairs, the Expendables are trying to get the hell out, going right through the front door. But when they open the door, basically what is left of the army is all waiting, just waiting for him.
Just hanging out waiting. And
Garza's up there like saying, these Americans, we got to get rid of them. They're the ones who caused all these problems. You know, and nobody knows that these Americans and Monroe aren't together. As far as they know, they came here to take out. You know, they did come there to take out Garza. So, but was Monroe the one who paid him to do so? Maybe. They don't know. And they're not. It's shoot first, ask questions later type situation.
Yeah. And they've also killed like 70 of their buddies.
And their own guy, yeah. So it's personal. But this ends up being the last speech of General Garza because Monroe kills him. Now Monroe grabs Sandra and, you know, basically has insurance to get the hell out of there. Pain is there. It's like, we got to make the way to get to the choppa type situation. Expendable shooting their way out. They realize where Monroe's headed. There's a big wall of fire. But, you know, the quick-thinking Pain has a solution for that fire. And this leads to our Randy Couture versus Steve Austin matchup, which back at that time would have seemed unheard of. But now, in today's modern world, 2023, the UFC and the WWE are together under one roof.
They are.
So the odds of a UFC guy when he's done with his UFC time fighting like whoever the big WWE star is at the time, it's pretty good nowadays.
Oh yeah,
pretty damn good nowadays.
I could totally see it happening. I mean, we've seen,
obviously Brock Lesnar,
yeah,
you did it already. Ronda Rousey to a lesser extent, but yeah, it definitely seems like what we're gonna see in the future.
And I won't be surprised when it happens. And I think that you'll get some crossover stars who probably do a little bit of both. I mean, obviously the guy that everybody's kind of fallen out of the spotlight the last couple of years, but Conor McGregor was one that everybody was just kind of waiting for him to retire from the
MMA,
MMA from the real fight game to go to the professional wrestling. So we'll see if that happens. He has been packed on a lot of muscle, so he could probably get away with using some juice if he plays his cards right.
Very true. Very true. And obviously quite the talker. So he would be perfect in a role like that. But yeah, we get that. And it ends up with Stone Cold, as I put here, almost as hot as he was back in 1998, because the man is on frickin' literal fire.
Literally on fire. And do we ever see him die?
No, I think it's more of an assumed type thing. But and he never came back.
You know what happens when you assume, Brain.
I know. So maybe for the fifth one, he'll show up and be all burnt up looking. And
some good scars.
I've been holding this grudge for a long time. You old bastards. He'll
go right after Megan Fox.
Okay. Barney and Caesar.
He'll hit a woman, Brain.
Yeah. Pain would hit a woman. You're right. Barney and Caesar, we get an exploding helicopter in very unique fashion. I'm sure our friends at Exploding Helicopter have covered this.
Of course, yeah.
Because Caesar, explain, Chad. Explain. This kind of reminded me of G.I. Joe. Remember when Chuckles, was it Chuckles who did that?
It was Chuckles.
Yeah.
In the G.I. Joe the film, yeah, G.I. Joe the movie. But yeah, so we've got Stallone's Barney Ross. I always want to call him Barney Rubble, but he's running towards this this chopper that's about to escape, and he's trying to save Sandra. Or did he already have Sandra at this point?
No, he doesn't have her.
Okay. Anywho, he's trying to stop this chopper from taking off, and he picks up this. It's like a warhead or some shit, right? It's a piece of ammunition from like a mortar. And he goes as if he's going to throw it, and Hail Caesar shows up, and he says, "No, it's too heavy." And he's like, "What do you want me to do with it?" And he's like, "Throw it as far as you can." And then he throws it, and Stallone just fucking kak, 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 and shoots it many times. I don't know if they work this way, but it explodes. It's a big explosion.
It really is, and it takes out the helicopter. But Monroe, he's persistent. He's going to still try to get out on foot. And he still has Sandra. So that eventually leads to the final showdown. And Barney's like, I didn't even come here for you, Monroe. I came here for her. Then he shoots the man. And at the same time, Christmas puts a knife through Monroe's back. And once again, it's a tie.
It's a tie.
Yeah, Lee Christmas is the guy who just keeps doing these run-ins. To give the baby faces a 2-on-1 advantage.
He's very sneaky. And you know what? That maybe that would have been a better role for Jet Li. I don't know.
Maybe. I don't agree with you, though. Time to go home. Sandra's going to stay, though. She's going to get Velina back on its feet and everything together. I guess maybe she'll run for whatever the hell kind of government they have down there. I don't know. Maybe she's the general.
Yeah, who knows?
It doesn't matter. Because that's the last we see of her. We get a little Creedence Clearwater Revival, Born on the Bayou, like we're a freaking hard target.
Like we're in New Orleans.
Right.
The Bayou.
At the tattoo shop. Mm-hmm. Hard target, also New Orleans. So that's why if you have an action movie and you have any kind of budget for licensed music, you have to basically use Born on the Bayou.
Yeah, the water boy.
Yes, we get some more knife throwing. We see that Gunner is back and forgiven, and that obviously will blend itself to the future of the franchise. And then it's all over. The Expendables go riding on their motorcycles. Thin Lizzy's The Boys Are Back in Town plays, and the end credits roll. And that was The Expendables from 2010, the original, the one that started it all.
Yes.
And I will say, on this rewatch, I did enjoy it much more than back when I watched it and when it came out on Blu-ray. But I do also recognize what it was that probably turned me off from it the first time.
Yeah, and I probably liked it more the first time I saw it than I did this time. You know, it's hard. You watch a movie. I actually saw this one in theaters, and I enjoyed it quite a bit. The music, I think, is still great. And I think that there's a lot of really cool scenes in this movie. And I think it does set up a team of guys.
Right.
Now, there are certain, if I were going to rebook it, I would do things a little differently. I would have definitely killed one of the Expendables for sure. And they had the perfect opportunity when they were running around putting the explosives all over the building. That in my mind, I was watching Jim Brown do that from The Dirty Dozen. And I would have saved that sequence for a little bit later. And it's like, we got to blow the building. No, we didn't get, anything in the West Wing or whatever. You know what I mean? And then you just got somebody running around, Terry Crews or whoever, Randy Couture throwing explosives. And then they have to blow it. They're forced to blow it or they're going to miss their opportunity. Boom. He gets taken out. But I don't know. I think that I'm not surprised. It's a series of films. I am surprised that they're still making them.
Right.
Which they probably won't make a fifth one from.
Not based on how this one is performing. And maybe so. That's another reason why I like this original one so much, is because I just saw the fourth one.
And you know what? I think the fact that it's just, this is kind of weird to say, but it is a bunch of old dudes in this role. And you know, the second one added, they didn't add anybody on the Expendables team, I don't think.
Well, briefly, Chuck Norris shows up, yes, and helps them, but he's not. Yeah, he's right. A lone wolf.
But the third one, it had brought a bunch of new blood in, and then the fourth one, they bring in even more new blood. It's like, come on, man. Like,
and I guess the second one also had the Hemsworth kid.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah,
he's terrible. And he's the one who had to, you know, like you said, somebody has to die, and he's the one who dies.
So the people who love the series are enjoying it for the old school guys. They're not enjoying it for.
Right.
Fucking
well, and that's why I love number two the most, because of the villain, Mr. Jean-Claude Van Damme.
And you know, Antonio Banderas is in the third one. He's cool as shit, right?
Right.
So yeah, Van Damme and Scott Adkins. You get some
right.
You get
Adkins in there. Yeah. So that's
two's fun.
Two is my favorite. Obviously, I would say one is the next, and I'd have to rewatch three to know if I liked it better or worse than four. I don't know. It probably won't happen though. So. There you go. The Expendables. Four movies in now and probably done.
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, still owns like 100.
Okay. And we're just about done with this episode of the Bulletproof Podcast. I want to, of course, remind everybody to check out bulletproofaction.com. I just mentioned Jean-Claude Van Damme. Well, his birthday is in October, and we will be celebrating with a special post. I'll talk to you about that after we're done on this recording, Chad Cruz. We'll also be wrapping up the coverage of The Continental and Ahsoka, and it is spooky season in October. So it's very possible we might get some action horror type material.
Wonderful. I'm rubbing my hands together.
You'll do action horror movies in June, so
yeah, I don't care.
You probably won't do one in October, but maybe other people will.
I'll do an action comedy.
Exactly, of course you will. You'll do a Christmas movie. So that's coming up. And next time right here on the Bulletproof Podcast, one that we have talked about for quite some time. And we're going to do it finally. Remo Williams, The Adventure Begins.
Sexy.
Cannot wait. One been anticipating for quite some time, so there it is. And maybe I'll have news coming up next time about, we talked about it last couple episodes, Battle in the Berg. That's in the history books now. It will be on the Premiere streaming network, and I will give that information when it becomes available, because I did the commentary right then and there. Chad,
it takes a lot. I mean, not everybody can do that.
It was a good time. I called an NWA World's title match.
That's cool.
And I got to be there to see Paul London sing Thunderball by Tom Jones. So pretty awesome.
Yeah, I do feel bad I couldn't make it, but I'm sorry.
I feel bad that I had to work with Ron Mathis again.
No, you didn't. He's fun.
He is. He was very good. And
he's always good.
And I will say, Tony Khan, if you're listening, and you need a new Rampage broadcast team, so maybe five more people watch that show, hire me and Ron Mathis.
There you go.
Because I think we could bring those five more people in.
I like it.
And maybe even more.
I would watch at least the first episode if you guys.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
At least the first one. Maybe more.
Maybe more. But yeah, no, it was good to see some old HWA colleagues. And to just be a part of the show live as it happened, not in my work from home status. So yeah, I will keep everybody up to date if anyone's interested. I know obviously probably not a ton of our listeners who may have actually had some interest were in the Cincinnati area. So
yeah,
this is a way to see it. Again, Bulletproof at Bulletproof Pod on Twitter/X, at Bulletproof Action on Threads, Instagram, and Facebook. Chad, any final thoughts or words for our listeners before we wrap this one up?
Continue listening and continue reading bulletproofaction.com. If you have any recommendations, we love recommendations. So there could be a thing in the future coming up where we where we dipped our toes into some of these recommendations.
Yeah, and the suggestion box may take over. We'll
it's
see.
Always open. So leave some suggestions and don't be afraid. And if I say it's a terrible idea, then just, you know.
It couldn't be any worse than some of the ideas Chad has come up with.
No, it's impossible for it to be worse.
Okay, there you go. All right. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And as always, stay tuned for more of the Bulletproof Podcast.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.